Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, how are you?
Very good, very good. Thanks for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, is my audio okay?
That's perfect.
Great.
So thanks for being with myself and the viewers today. So it's not live, but obviously it will be at some point in January. So I usually make an intro of my guest on the podcast before it starts. But last time I made the intro in French and I had like comments from English viewers, and one time I did it in English and people told me it was a French podcast. So do you mind if I let you intro yourself today so I don't get like complaints from viewers?
Not at all.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Heidi Myers. I'm the co-founder of the Raspetitsa Spring Classic, also known as Raspetitsa Dirt, which takes place in April in East Burke, Vermont.
That's amazing. That's great. Great intro. Can you maybe we can start with how it started for Rasputitsa? And I'm sorry, it will be very hard for me to pronounce this throughout
Hard for
the
me to pronounce it.
podcast. That's awesome. So can you tell me how it started for this event?
Yeah, so myself and co-founder Anthony Mocha both worked at Garneau in the States, so in Derby, Vermont. And we had been working there for some time and felt like we were very disconnected from what was going on in the cycling world because we sold cycling apparel from behind a computer screen. So he was an outside sales rep in New England, and I was a inside marketing person there. And we had discussed going on some event journey together, and initially that was potentially a triathlon, but looking into it, insurance for a triathlon is pretty costly because of the water component. So at the time, there was this really cool race called the Almanzo 100, which I don't know if you've heard of. It was put
Unfortunately,
on,
not.
yeah, it was put on by a friend of ours, Chris Scogan. And it was essentially you mailed in a postcard, there was no entry fee, and you went and you rode a really hard course on gravel roads. And gravel was, we definitely weren't the first to gravel, but it was new then, and this was 2013. And we looked around us in our backyard and said, okay, we have tons of gravel roads. So we put on our first race, which was called the Dirty 40, in Derby, Vermont. Hoping to get, we made the agreement between us that if we could get 50 friends to the start line, that would be a success. And our first year we had 350.
That's
So it
awesome.
just kind of organically blew up.
That's amazing. And so that's really funny because every time I talk about this event with my friends, like for years, I said that I would sign up for it. And unfortunately, I couldn't make it yet. But like people are either excited or like they are scared of April. You know, it's end of April. It's more than just dirt. It's mud. It can be like freezing. So like that makes the event legendary. But why did you choose April?
So we finished our first Dirty 40 in the fall of 2013. That event took place around the US holiday, Labor Day. We were just so invigorated from the experience that we said, okay, let's do it again and let's do it faster than a year from now. So the Spring Classics have always been iconic in my mind, and races that I've loved to follow. And so we said to ourselves, spring in Vermont would be pretty epic. And it turned out to be really epic and also like really unique for the audience.
Yeah, I think epic and unique are definitely like two words that describe very well what I could see so far from the event. Speaking of the event, like who is it for? Who's the target audience for the event?
So we have kind of evolved through time. There was a time that, you know, we focused on trying to get pro riders there, and we felt that that was important and it encouraged people. And the more we talked to riders, what really made the difference was just it being for anybody and everybody. And so we focused less on the top 1%, though we still feel that they're essential to the cycling ecosystem. And we don't discourage them from participating, but we don't put all our efforts there. We really try to just get more people to the start line of all abilities and uniqueness.
Yeah, and like from what I could read on Instagram and everything on social media, you are very inclusive. You have an inclusive vibe. Can you elaborate a little more about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's nothing that anybody can own. Like, I hate events that say that, you know, market themselves as we're inclusive, because I think that, like, that's so broad and so vast, and there's still people that can't do our event because of physical limitations and fear limitations and financial limitations. So I've always felt it to be like a little bit bold when people say like, oh, we're inclusive, because limitations still exist. But we, as much as we can, we always try to work through those limitations. So like, we've had riders reach out that haven't been able to afford the event, and we've offered, like, I hate to market this on a podcast, but anybody who says like, I can't afford it, or I can only afford this much, we'll get you in. Like, we don't want to turn anybody away. We've, you know, improved vastly over the years to make room and make lots of room for populations that haven't been as welcomed and cherished in cycling and in general. So last year we hosted the night before a Pride Ride. We're always just trying to like push ourselves to be kinder, better humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I just feel like it's inclusive on like all the spectrum of inclusivity. You know, you talked about like how you allow people that don't have the money, but I also saw a post about like, it's not about your bike, it's about like your desire to ride. Last summer, someone like reshared it. And yeah, I think also from a diversity and inclusion, like everything I saw, like I think your ratio, like the male female ratio, is quite high compared to other events. I think that's a tremendous effort that the cycling, not only the industry, but everyone within the community should make. And you make quite an effort compared to some other events in the industry.
Yeah, we definitely make an effort, and it's definitely something that we're always trying to do better. I myself don't fit the traditional cycling mold, and I never have, even after working in the industry for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I'm an overweight female cyclist, so I stand on the outside. I stand outside the fire a lot. But then also, like, you know, my salary doesn't, you know, if it hadn't been for the opportunities afforded to me through working in the industry and promoting cycling through an event, I quite honestly probably wouldn't be able to afford the sport myself. So those two things always play in the back of my mind. I'm sure Anthony and Jeff have their own, you know, prejudices and things that they hold as well. But I think just not organically fitting in the traditional cycling mold has, you know, weighed upon the way we've promoted ourselves.
No, totally. if we talk a little more about like the event, I think it reached the like legendary status. I first heard of it like in the Peloton magazine, which is like huge in the cycling industry. I think Vegan Cyclist almost lost like his feet at your event. Like it was totally frozen. Like we saw a ton of content creators going to Vermont and try the course over the years. Would you say it's legendary? And if so, what makes the success of your event?
I mean, the more people I talk to, I think I'm gradually being convinced that it's legendary. I'm a pretty humble person myself, so to affiliate myself with like, oh, I'm legendary or famous, are always things that are hard for me to swallow and hard for me to pat myself on the back for. I think legendary also goes with like what your expectations are. We have three course distances now just to meet people, because legendary looks different for different people and different people. I remarked to a friend this morning that I think sometimes we're privileged to think of finishing a race when it's actually, for a lot of people, the actual piece that they're winning is actually getting to the start line. They come from discrimination or trauma or physical disabilities, neurological disabilities. Like sometimes just getting yourself to the start line is actually winning. So I think legendary is really a personal perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I think like as a cyclist, I have different objective than some people around me. Obviously, like I would not try to win, just like finishing it would be a great success. I think like some people just overcoming the fear of going to the start line is definitely like fulfilling an objective.
Yeah. And I think it's hard, like whichever course you pick, whichever distance you pick, like that's an element of hard. And I hate when people say, you know, like that it's only hard for the elite. And I feel like it's hard even for the person that's at the last place of the smallest distance. That's their personal challenge. And I hate anything that ever demeans that or, you know, affiliates those people with just having fun. Like, it's fun for everybody, front mm-hmm. of the race and back of the race. But it's also hard for everybody.
Yeah. Do you consider it like a race or a ride with a podium? Do you see the difference within like the two categories?
Yeah. I think I'll never stray from a race, from thinking of ourselves as a race. Mostly because I think everybody deserves the chance to race.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not a racer or a pro or, you know, aiming for the top three in your age category, I think everybody deserves that feeling of like, I'm actually out here racing. I know I certainly would more than likely finish, if not last, if not dead last, almost last. But I would still want to feel like a racer. And I don't think that's something we should take away from people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. And yeah, because and this is very personal, because I'm not like trying to fight for a position, but rather like if I go to your event and it's muddy as hell, I would just like a brevet, you know, just finishing it and saying that I did it would be something that I would be proud of. Because of the technical aspect, I'm not a good technician, so that's why I was asking about like race versus ride with a podium. So
yeah, the race can be against yourself, it can be against, you know, your buddies, it can be against like obstacles that you're fighting through in your mind as you pedal along in your bike, like if there's things that you're trying to cope within life. I mean, race can mean a lot of different things. It doesn't have to mean the pursuit to the first.
Yeah. And that brings me to my next question, because like it reached to me the legendary status. Did you think, like, back in 2013, it would be as big as it is right now?
No. No, again, we were just trying to get 50 riders to the start line. I think I'm always amazed. I think this year is actually one of the years I'm most amazed. We're at 1,300 riders right now to date, and we've spent zero on advertising and done really little effort to get the word out. Marketing our event and selling our event is something that doesn't come naturally to us. I think we announced that registration was open once and then we like shut up about it because it's something that you need to opt into. It's something, not something I feel you should be marketed or pressured into. Mm-hmm. And just the community that backs us and believes in us and supports us year after year is something that I don't think I will ever feel not surprised about.
Yeah. And that's probably why also it's so big and fun, because like you don't have the pressure and you don't like push for sales and stuff like that. Because like throughout the pandemic, I think like a few events died and throughout the years, and yours is growing obviously years over years. So I guess the fact that it's fun and it's not salesy, it's probably also big part of the factor why it's so fun.
Yeah, and our business model, like we don't, have sales projections. We don't have strategy meetings. We, like Anthony, myself, and Jeff, like are pretty much in this until it's no longer fun for us. Mm-hmm. And at that point, we'll hang up our hat and, go back to our families and private lives. But like it's maintained the sense of fun for us. And that's how we measure our success and how we keep in the game. Like if we're still having fun, Rasputitsa will still exist. The day it doesn't become fun and feels like we have projections to meet, we'll turn in our hat. But because of that, like success for us could mean 500 participants one year. It could mean 1,300. It could mean 100. Like fun doesn't dictate numbers.
Yeah, and I think this is why, like, we feel it as cyclists or consumers. We feel it that you have fun, and this is why, like, it's fun for us too. Sorry about that. You said that you were not pushing from a marketing perspective, and you were not like you didn't have like sales meeting and sales objective, but how do you keep the hype year over year?
That's hard. And I think up until like a week and a half ago, like we've kind of been dragging feet preparing for April. We've gone through times where we've actually had to pull ourselves off of social for mental health reasons. Like it's hard. It's definitely 100% a passion project for us. And just like anything in your life, that comes with some flux. So sometimes you're like, this is the greatest thing I have going. And sometimes you're like, I don't really want to do this anymore. But I think really focusing in on like why we do this is the only thing that keeps us passionate and having fun. And I think it's stories with riders. Like today I had coffee over Zoom with a friend and listened to her experience of this cancer battle that she's gone through in the last year. It's checking in with our riders. It's getting to know people. It's building relationships. That's all stuff we're good at and stuff that we pride ourselves on. The marketing piece, the selling piece, the business piece. We're really horrible business people.
And that's probably another argument why it's so fun from a consumer perspective, because we don't feel like you try to get in our wallet at any occasion or every occasion you have. So do you have any plans or anything special coming for the next edition?
I think so. I think I can kind of tease some things, although nothing is solidified. We're working on an art gallery this year with some regional artists. So curating a gallery just because we feel like we're a creative group as well. And so supporting the arts is something that's important to us. What else? Might be deviating from the farmer's market, but I can't let the cat out of the bag just yet on what will be next there. And then we've volunteered at a bunch of events over the summer, just to kind of like see the landscape and see what's going on. And a piece that was reinforced through those multiple events was just the concern of safety. So we've invested a lot of resources, and we will continue to invest a lot of resources in making sure that riders are safe, others that navigate the road are safe, our community is safe. So that's been a big initiative for 2023.
Yeah, safety first. You said you have three courses, right?
Correct.
Could you describe them for our viewers, please?
Yeah, they change every year, sometimes slightly, sometimes vastly. The top course is 100 kilometers. The next course down is 70 kilometers. And the course after that is 40 kilometers. There's points where all of those races meet, so that there's pieces that you'll experience that every rider will experience, and there's pieces that are separate. I think what's important is that they all end and finish on Pinkham Road, which is a pretty large climb at the very end that every rider has to suffer through. So, and I think we've timed it, and Anthony's masterminded it so that all racers kind of come in at flux together. So there's no, like everybody feels like they participated in the same event. And I think mm-hmm. that's important.
And that's a pretty good idea, because sometimes like you're last to start like by 30 minutes, and then the first group arrives like an hour or 2 hours later, and then they wait for 3 hours for their friends who yeah. were like in the first group.
There's three separate starts, but the finishers should all come in roughly the same time.
That's awesome. I would ask, you said that 1,300 people already registered. Do you still have some spots open if like a viewer decide to sign up for your event?
I do. I'm actually giving one to you so that...
Oh, that's amazing.
that you can experience it yourself. But yeah, we do. We don't necessarily have a cutoff. Like when we feel like we're full, we cut it off. So it's a little bit of a gamble with Rasputitsa. Like we're always full of surprises, and you never truly know what you're going to get. And sometimes we'll give away free registration for a day or so, and sometimes we'll just turn it off. So I'd urge everybody to get in while you can, even yeah. though again, I don't mean to like oversell it. But yeah,
there but are. But hurry up, folks.
But hurry up.
That's amazing. So, yeah, so I think I've gone through all my questions. It's usually like shorter podcast. I think that's all. I would invite everyone to go in the description for to see the URL and go visit the Rasputitsa website. And it happens on April 29th, 2023, in Burke, Vermont. In terms of conclusion, did you want to add anything that we didn't go through during this podcast?
Sure. I'll just add that like we pride ourselves on being a community. And so like part of that is listening to riders. So if there's any ever, if there's ever any negative feedback or suggestions, we want everyone to feel like they have a voice and our ears are open. We have pretty thick skin after being in this game for 10 years. So there's nothing you can say that's necessarily going to hurt our feelings. And we'd rather hear what potentially could hurt our feelings than not listen at all. So,
Really get negative feedback? Because to be honest, like everyone who like signed up for your event always came back and said, it was awesome. It was like one of the greatest events. It was fun. And they all want to sign up again. The only complaint they have is the weather because it's so shitty. But at the same time, I mean, this is why it's so cool, because we don't see any event like this in the landscape of gravel riding, right?
Yeah. I mean, we do. Like, I would be amiss to say that we've never received negative feedback. We do. We listen. I think as much as possible, we try to take it offline and have human conversations with people. Mm-hmm. So I've received emails from riders before and like looked up their phone number on Bike Reg and called them, because I think it's better if you hear each other as humans than if you chat behind screens where sometimes people feel like screen warriors. So we've always tried to like just really listen and make it human.
This is some pretty good customer service, and I'm surprised because I only heard like really good and positive feedback from this event.
Awesome, that's great to hear.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I'll see you April 29th in Berg, Vermont.
Awesome, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. Merci d'avoir écouté l'épisode. Je vous dis à la prochaine fois. See you soon.